Welcome back to Between the Stripes League of Ireland Life Story series. I'm delighted today to be joined by former League of Ireland manager and a good player as well back in his day, John Gill. John, how are you keeping?
Very good, Ciarán, thank you. Yeah, keeping well.
I suppose it's been a while since you departed Dundalk, John. What have you been doing since then?
Just watching a lot of football, Ciarán, domestically and up north and over in the UK. European level football is a passion, so you never really lose interest in it. So I've been watching a lot of games, yeah, with interest.
Look, I'm sure we'll be talking to Dundalk later. You have a great story there, a great association. But as ever, we'll go back to the very start. And as I said, you had a good playing career in the League of Ireland. But your first job was with Kilkenny City, I believe, as assistant. I know it was a short enough stint. You moved on fairly quickly. But was it always in your mind to get into coaching?
No, that came about very funnily, Ciarán. I was coaching a Leinster Senior League team called Whitehall Rangers at the time. It was in 2001, nearly 20 years ago. And I had just finished playing myself about a year beforehand. So I was working with a guy who used to be actually the ex-captain of the St. Francis team that got to the 1990 Cup Final, Martin Kerr, very well-known guy in football circles in Dublin. I was Martin's assistant and coach, and got a phone call one day from Billy Walsh, who was Joe McGrath's assistant. Joe McGrath had just been sacked. Billy was asked to take over the team for the remainder. It was in the Premier Division. And he asked, would I mind if I looked after the Dublin-based players? Actually, a few very good players. You've got Robbie Brunton, God rest him. You'd little Derek McGrath. You'd actually a guy that had a very good career in America, Gavin Wilkinson. He's actually, I think he's the CEO of one of the clubs over there now. So it was about five or six Dublin-based players. They came up and trained with us. Kilkenny got relegated. Billy asked to meet me at the end of that season. And he said, listen, the squad is going to be split next year. Would you be interested in coming in as my assistant? And in them days, you didn't need any badges. There was no blue Peter badges needed to coach. So I said, yeah, give it a go. And we had a very good, we'd one season there. I would have been involved also with the Leinster Senior League representative side that year. So I knew a lot of the very good Leinster Senior League players. So I got a few of them to join, the likes of Garrett Bourne, Ben Whelihan, a lot of Brian Rickard, a lot of guys who played in Leinster Senior League, and we signed them for Kilkenny. I also then would have had a good handle on young players. A very young 18-year-old, Billy Hughes, got him to sign that year. He was a revelation. And we had a good season that year. We finished, I think we finished fourth, Ciarán. But what happened was there was money problems at the end of the season. The players weren't paid, and I felt a duty of care to the players that I had got to join the club. I left with about 2 weeks to go of that season, because I just didn't feel it was right, you know, players making the sacrifices, and they were getting paid very little anyway. So I left, and Dermot Keely then took over Kildare County in 2002. It was a new project, a startup project. It was exciting, and I went in there as Dermot's assistant.
I think before we go any further, obviously, on my behalf of myself, I've spoke to Dermot on this show before, and I just want to pass on condolences on his very sad loss. And obviously, you're close to Dermot as well. So we have to just keep that in mind as we're talking. But you mentioned it was a new project at Kildare. Did you have a relationship with Dermot before you went in? Or how did that relationship form?
I would have played for him, Ciarán. I played for Dermot for a short period in Sligo. When he took over Sligo, I went down there on loan from Drogheda for a couple of months. So kind of knew of him, would have known of him. He rang me. I wouldn't have been bosom buddies with him, but he rang me at the end of that season. He had just gone from Shells, Ciarán. He'd only just left Shells, I think. And when he rang me, I met him, and it sounded a really, it was a buoyant project. Like, it was excited. Kildare County, we were going to play out of Newbridge. There seemed to be a lot of interest in the county. I mean, our first game we played, I think we had 3,000 people at the game in Station Road. Like, it was a really exciting time. We got together. I took about six or seven players that were with me in Kilkenny to Kildare. We signed a couple of very good experienced players, Gavin Dykes, John Ryan. And we had a really good season. We actually lost out in the playoffs that year in goal difference. In the last minute, I think it was Cove scored a last minute equaliser. And they actually made the playoffs on goal difference. We finished third that year in the first season. Great season. And what happened then was Ronan Seary rang me from Dublin City. But again, this is a good story. He rang me and I met him, and he'd gone through a few managers, and he said, listen, would you be interested in the job? Now, at this stage, I'd only got 2 years experience as an assistant manager come coach. I remember speaking to Dermot about it. And Dermot said, no, don't take it. Stay here. He said, you'll never make a manager. You're too nice. And I said, Dermot, what do you mean I'm too nice? He said, you're far too nice. I said, Dermot, do you know the reason I'm nice? I'm going around picking fellas up off the ground at your feet. Because Dermot would have been old school, great manager. But, there was no grey area with Dermot. It was black and white. Told you what he wanted. And if you didn't do what he wanted, you didn't play. But it would have been a very, very straight up, aggressive type of character. And I learned an awful lot from him. And he basically said, you'll never make a manager. I went to Dublin City that year and I won the league in my first year. So we laughed about that after. We had some funny times over that one.
Maybe he just didn't want to lose you.
Well, I don't know about that. But listen, we've all got to move on. I enjoyed the time at Dublin City. It was a great time as well. And Ronan Searle was a great guy, a great character, a very good chairman. It went all tits up on for him in the end.
Could you see that coming even in your time there?
Kieran, he was so ambitious. He was such a good chairman. Like he would go the extra mile. And I knew there was financial constraints. And he was trying to get. It was around the time, if you remember, Wimbledon were talking about coming into the Premier. Yeah. Remember, it was around that time as well. But he was trying to work on a brand. The brand was a great brand, Dublin City. And our kit was nearly the same as the Dublin Gaelic football team. And he was trying to create a brand and a uniqueness. But you can't. The one thing you can't invent is supporters. And we didn't just have the support base. We got promoted and I left after 16 games. I went out and signed a lot of very good young players. Killian Brennan, I got back from England. Gary O'Neill. Philly Hughes, we had a lot of very good young players. I got into the club, kind of went young, and I kind of complimented them with the likes of Dom Tierney, Jason Caldwell, Tony O'Connor, Wesley Bourne, ex-Longford Town, I got to sign, and Robbie Horgan was in goal. We had a good mixture of youth and experience, but it wasn't good enough, and I left in the second year, and the reason I left, I wasn't sacked, I knew that he needed investment, and at the time, if you remember, there was a guy called Bruce. He owned Gretna. Bruce, can't think of his name. Roddy, he would have been. And I actually recommended Roddy Collins for the job. I said, give Roddy the job. He might be able to bring this guy in with investment. That's what you need. Now, Rocky didn't want me to go, but I kind of fell on my own sword because I knew that he had worked so hard to get the club into the Premier Division that you only get one shot at this. And if you didn't, we were only a couple of points adrift of Derry and Longford at the time. Alan Matthews was managing Longford. I think my last league game, we'd beaten Longford in Talca Park. Gary O'Neill had scored two goals. And we were a point behind Longford, I think 2 points behind Derry after 16 games. And I knew that if we could get a bit of investment in and a little bit more experience, the team was capable of staying up. I left. The rest is history after that.
And look, it's nothing to do with you, obviously, but it's a shame that the first three clubs you were involved with as a coach, Kilkenny, Kildare and Dublin City, are no longer there. And you touched on it there. It's very hard in this sport, in football in particular, to create a team overnight and to try and build up a fan base then and a history and all of the rest, because it's probably one of the sports where you can't do that. Fans like history, they like tradition, and they're always a little bit suspicious when they see these new teams being formed, and probably a few of those clubs were probably a victim of that, I'd imagine.
Yeah, and if you look at even the ground is still down in Kilkenny, smashing little ground down there, Kieran. The ground is magnificent. It really is. It's out in the Callan Road. Beautiful.
I think it's still been used for schoolboy football and the likes, I think, isn't it? Which is good to see.
Yeah, I called into it last year. I was down there in business and I actually called in and climbed over the fence and got in, and it was just nice to see it. And what a ground. It's something actually I'd love to see the FAI probably redevelop it or do something with it, because and I still think, it under the right circumstances, I feel we should still have a club from Kilkenny. You know what I mean? I think there's a catchment area that you could, with the right resources behind it, there's a ground there. Create another club, but you're right, I'm the common denominator. My name should be Lucky, maybe.
On to that Lone Town then, and they were really in the doldrums back then. They were bottom of the first division when you took over. I'd imagine there wasn't a lot of money flowing around at Lone either. So a very difficult start to your management career. You didn't have anything handed to you.
No, I was on holidays away with my wife and two kids and I got a phone call away, and I think they just sacked Stephen Kelly, and they were bottom of the league, and they asked me would I be interested. I came back and I met them and I said, yeah, I'll do it at the end of the season. And we actually had a couple of good results. We drew with Sligo twice, who won the league that year under Sean Connor. And the problem down there was, and it's the first time I had encountered it, was you'd a split squad. You'd half the squad in Dublin and you'd half the squad in Athlone. And what I tried to do was, they were training separately, Kieran. That was like two divisions. I'll never get my first game. I went down to watch them. They were playing Dundalk, ironically. Jim Gannon was managing Dundalk. I went in and had a look at the game. They were beaten 2-1. Went into the dressing room after the game. And I said, right, lads. I was introduced. And I said, we're going to train in Dublin this Sunday morning. And the following Sunday, what we'll do, we'll come to Dublin. The Dublin contingent will come down to Athlone. So we kind of all agreed this. I went home. I got a phone call from the chairman on the Saturday telling me that there was a little bit of a mutiny in the camp, that the Athlone lads were refusing to travel up. And I said, okay, tell the lads I'll meet them in Mel's Park. That's what we're playing. I'll see them there at 10 o'clock in the morning. I let my assistant, Jerry Scully, take the Dublin lads. And I went down there. Went into the dressing room and I said, right, lads, what's the problem here? Why don't we want to train together? We're a team. Why not? I told you we'd be going to Dublin this week. We'll come down next week. They weren't really having it. I said, well, there's going to be more change because I'm going to get a training facility in Mullingar and we're all going to be training in Mullingar. And there was mutiny over that. So a couple of people left. And no problem with that. And we still ended up finishing bottom, but we made up. We were adrift by quite a bit. We made up a few points and our performances were better. We ended up training in Mullingar Towns Ground in Dalton Park. We trained there twice a week and it was a little bit better. And I got a bit of stick that season when I left. And the funny thing was, I actually submitted a report to Athlone of what I wanted to do the following year. I actually done an actual written report out of what I wanted to do, who I wanted to sign. It was like a pathway of where I saw the club going. And I heard nothing for 3 weeks, literally heard nothing for 3 weeks. In the meantime, Dundalk got in touch with me. This was in 2006. And when I met Dundalk, I basically gave them the same report and they obviously liked what they saw. And I took the job. And then when I took the job, funny enough, I got a phone call, asked me what was going on. I said, listen, I'd heard from nobody in 3 weeks. Like you can't just sit around in this game. You've got to be proactive. So I took the Dundalk job in 2006 and it was probably the best decision I ever made.
We'll move on to Dundalk next. You had some near misses in the first couple of years there, promotion wise. 2007 obviously been the most controversial of them. We all know the story there. You finally got it done in 2008, but did you ever think in the first couple of years you wouldn't get that chance to carry on?
Well, it was 2006 was the controversial, Kieran, would you believe?
Sorry,
that was the
2006,
year that was the year we finished a point behind Rovers on the last weekend of the season, and we beat Waterford in the playoff, if you remember. We beat them in the two-legged playoff, and they made us play three games in 6 days. What happened was we had to play Finn Harps on a Saturday, actually, and the game was called off because of the weather. They made us play it on the Sunday in atrocious conditions up in Finn Park. We needed to win the game. We did. We won it 1-0. We actually stole the game, which meant that we had a playoff game against Waterford on the Tuesday in Oriel, and then the following Friday down in the RSC. Now, at this stage, whoever won the playoff was odds on to go up. So we went into that game. We drew the game in Oriel, and then there was kind of rumblings before the return leg in the RSC that there was this IE. You remember they were doing the rankings. But I was told not to worry. We went down to the RSC as underdogs, and we won down there. Trevor Vaughan scored 2 goals. So we all thought we were promoted. We brought down about 1,000 fans or 1,500 fans. We had a brilliant night down there. We were euphoric. The following week, we're told, no, you're not going up. Galway, you finished fourth. And they rolled out Michael D. Higgins, the present president, to do their... They rolled him out to the City West to do a PR job. And we'd beaten Galway. I think every team played each other 4 times. We'd beaten Galway 4 times that year. They finished fourth. And they promoted Galway because they said the facilities were better than Oriel, which may have been the case. But then my argument was, why did you make us play 3 games in 6 days? You know, welfare of players, the expense of it. Why have the playoffs at all? Why bother having a playoff if there was nothing tangible at the end of it? The FAI was going to... Remember, Maxi was going to burn down the FAI.
I met him in town yesterday, actually. Great lad.
Well, Kieran, I'm down in... This is the true story. I'm down in Port Leash working. I'm in a cash and carry doing a sales call, and I get a phone call. It's the police and the fudge. It's the assistant commissioner, a guy called John Toomey. I'll never forget it. He said, where are you? Of course, my heart pumped. I'm thinking, what's gone wrong? Has it been an accident? Yeah. Or he said, nothing to worry about. We need to get you back to Dublin. I said, I'm in Port Leash. He said, stay where you are. I'm going to get a squad car down for you. And I said, what's wrong? And he told me that. He said, listen, there's somebody after locking themselves in the FAI, and he's demanding to see yourself and John Delaney. So a squad car duly arrived. One of the guards got out and took my car. I'm in the back of a squad car and have 2 motorbikes. It's the only time I've ever been in a cavalcade. And they brought me back to Dublin at warp speed. And we went around to the FAI. Maxie wanted to speak to me and Delaney. Delaney, of course, didn't want to know. He hid. Pat Costello came out with me, I think it was, and we managed to talk Mark down. And after it was finished, John Toomey brought me into the old FAOI offices, and I met there. And Delaney proceeded to assassinate me verbally. And John Toomey said to him, how dare you speak to this man like that? He starts coming out and defusing the situation. You wouldn't even go and speak to the guy. Because Delaney felt that I had been, which I had been very vocal in the papers and in the press about the way we'd been treated, because it was disgraceful. Like, I was going to walk away from football then, Kieran.
That's what I was going to ask you. Did all of that make you want to pack it in?
It did, Kieran, because I knew that the club was, we'd worked really hard that year. A lot of good people, Pádraig McKeown, Peter Halpin, you know, Jerry Matthews, the owner. There was some really good people there then, and we worked really hard, and the club had been in the doldrums. Like, my first game in charge, we'd 400 people at a game, our first home game. By the end of that season, we were bringing 2,000 people. We were bringing, you probably remember, like, we were bringing 600-700 people up to away games, more, some of them. And then we were getting 2,500 people at home games. So to deprive the area and the club of that, in my view, was a disgrace, and still is a disgrace. Following year, I was talking to staying on. Following year, we were beaten in the playoff, which was a killer. Finn Harps beat us, and probably deservedly so. But again, highlights, bringing the likes, giving Sean Williams his debut, brought a lot of good young players through. And then, the third year, I mean, you could write a book of the fairy tale stuff.
There's actually, I'm not sure if you've ever seen it, John. There's a brilliant documentary on YouTube by David Lennon. He was in school at the time, and he was putting together a video package for the last couple of games of the year. And he actually captures on the final day of the season the drama, and it's actually very, very good. I must send it on to you. I think you'd enjoy having a look at it.
Well, Kieran, all I remember of that game is that we this is probably well known. We started the season very well. We had got a lead. Shells, Dermot Keely, ironically, was managing Shells, and they probably got the same resources we had. He had a good side. They kind of started to roll us, reel us in a bit. Fingal were full time that year in the league. They finished third. We beat them that year. I think we beat them twice and drew with them once. But Shells start reeling us in, and about there was five games to go, and we had a game against Wexford, and it was down in Wexford. But it was a double weekend, so we had a game on the Friday and a game on the Monday. Pat Scuddy was still manager of Shamrock Rovers, and I'm mentioning him because I'll tell you what happened next. We went down to Wexford, and I thought Wexford were struggling, and a bit sillily on my part, I left out a few of the senior players because I wanted to keep them fresh for the Fingal game on the Monday, which was a big game. So I left out the likes of Aidan Lynch, John Flanagan. I rested a few senior players, thinking that I'd have enough in the squad. But we got beaten 3-1. It was terrible. So on the way back on the coach, there was two directors that used to come with us. They were telling me not to worry, don't be. I said, oh, I'm not panicking. We've, you know, Shells are a point behind us now. We've enough in the tank. But I knew it was a big game on the Monday. I got a phone call on the Saturday from, I won't say who, but another well-known League of Ireland manager saying, John, you're going to be called to a meeting before training tomorrow and you're going to be sacked. And I said, what? He said, you're going to be sacked. And he said, they've offered the job to Pat Scully. And I said, you're joking me. So I couldn't. Listen, I rang the assistant. I said, listen, I think we're going to be called to a meeting. Saturday night, I got a phone call. Can you meet us before training tomorrow? So we went up early, set training up, and I was brought into the boardroom, and the full board were there. And I brought my assistant with me, and I was asked, have you lost the dressing room? I said, where is this coming from? I've had three absolute unbelievable seasons here. We've four games to go. I feel we're going to win the league. I still feel we've enough to win the league. And they said, well, we believe you've lost the dressing room. So, well, that's not true. And I said, can I ask a question to Jerry? To Jerry Matthews at the time. I said, Jerry, has anybody in this room spoken to Pat Scully about my position? And Jerry, in fairness, wouldn't know who Pat Scully was, but a few other heads ducked down when I asked that question. And Jerry actually asked, who's Pat Scully? And I said, well, he's the former manager of Shamrock Rovers who left last week. He parted company. And I said, somebody here, I've been led to believe that somebody here has spoken to him and met him. Jerry claimed he knew nothing about it, and I've no reason to doubt that. I said, listen, I haven't got time for this nonsense. I'm going down there to take a training session. And they said to me, can we speak to the players before training? I said, no, you can speak to them after training. So I went down, I gathered the players around. I asked every one of them. Now, again, you're always going to have some players who aren't happy, but they all seem to be, to a man, listen, we don't know where this will come from. We trained, and then I left, and they met the players up in the boardroom, and the players, the conversation lasted about 3 minutes before Aidan Lynch, who was the captain, the players got up and they walked out. They said, we're right behind the manager. We played on the Monday night, we won, and I know we drew against Limerick, and we won the league in the in injury time with the famous goal from Limerick, but you don't win a league over injury. You win a league over a season. And even now, you still get some supporters there saying I was lucky. You don't get lucky over 36 games or whatever it was. So we won it. And I knew, I kind of knew then, I didn't engage with the board after I had that meeting on the Sunday. And I probably, I should have handled things differently. I could have been a bit more mature about it. I wasn't. I buried my head in the sand. I said, fuck yous. You know, and I didn't engage with the press up there. I didn't engage with the board. And I heard nothing after we won the league for 3 weeks. And then I got a phone call asking me, would I like to reapply for my job again? And I said, no. So,
do you regret that?
I probably wouldn't have got the job if I'd applied for it anyway, Kieran. But I regret not being given the chance to take the team into the Premier Division, because I felt I had three very good seasons up there. My win ratio was over 53%. If you look at my record in Dundalk when I managed them, like I had an unbelievable record over three seasons. And I just love the club, the supporters, the great people up there. It's, you know, you're up there now. It's a passionate town.
Yeah.
Fantastic football club. So I do regret that I wasn't given the chance to carry on the work that I started.
Yeah, like obviously I knew the kind of circumstances around you leaving the club, but I never knew that story before with four games to go in a season. That's incredible. Yeah. So
that's true. That is a true story.
That's why we do these shows. We love to hear these stories. But I suppose after that, you didn't manage on your own again in the League of Ireland. Was that because you were hurt by what happened and you decided you were done with managing, or did you just not get the opportunities?
I didn't get the opportunities, really. I think maybe people looked at me as, I don't know, damaged goods, or I don't know. It'd be, like, you know what, Kieran? I've, in the first division, I've won it twice as a player and I've won it twice as a manager. Not many people can say that. And I've won a playoff in it. I've six first division medals. Not saying I know, you know, but there is a way to get out of that division. There's a certain way to get out of it. And I know, and I fully believe I know the way to get out of it. And it's not all about resources either. It's a number of collection of things. I didn't get a chance, but I got a chance to work with other people. Pete Mann, I worked with Pete for 2 years in St. Pat's, where we had a great 2 years, had a great European run. And again, he was treated very harshly at the end as well. After us having a great run, he was let go because, I don't know if you remember, we backed the players. There was nearly going to be a player strike before a European game. The night before, the players were meeting the owner to work out bonuses. And again, disgraceful in my view. Pete was got rid of because of that. And we got to the final of the Setanta Cup that year. Finished in Europe, the European places twice. Pete's let go. I went with Trevor Crowley then to Rovers. And again, I'm probably the enduring theme here because Trevor got sacked in August. And he had won three trophies a year before, but I didn't know Trevor, but enjoyed working with him. I left when he left because that's something I do. I don't hang around. If I'm working with somebody, I would be intensely loyal, which some people tell me is I'm silly being, but I don't regret the way I am. I have principles, and I have certain principles, and I'm an intensely loyal person no matter what I do. So worked with Trevor there for a year. Went to Bray for 6 months with Trevor. That was interesting with the two O'Connors being there, Dennis, and you know, that was an interesting period. We lasted 8 or 9 games there. Went to Pete Mann then again, went back to Drogheda, former club of mine for 2 years, got them promoted in our first year in the playoff, and then got the phone call from Vinny 2 years ago. So it's been a roller coaster 20 years this year.
The Drogheda one in particular, was that a bad dressing room?
Yeah, being honest. And, and if you speak to some of the players there, they'll blame me. I'll blame a couple of individuals there because we had a great dressing room the year before. Some of the players are still there, like Connor Kane, Mark Doyle. We gave them their debuts. Jake Hyland, those boys are still there. Great lads. We probably Pete would be the first to admit this. Probably made mistakes in recruitment. That's being honest. We didn't have much money. Like it goes to show, it's not about money to get out of the first division, but you do need a certain level of it to compete in the Premier Division. We made a couple of calls that we shouldn't have made, and it infected the dressing room in my view. And it didn't end well there. But listen, that's football.
Because that's the question I always ask managers when it's transfer time, especially clubs like Longford Town, for example, wouldn't have the biggest budget in the world. So they have to be very select about who they go out and get. And especially in these COVID times now, maybe you're not able to get out and watch certain players a lot of the time. You have to go off videos or whatever. How important is it you're looking at their character as much as their ability?
Well, I admire the job Dara's done. He's done an unbelievable job because you've got to take into account what happened when Neil Fenn left. Like, in fairness to Dara, Dara's stayed on and brought and the club, in fairness to them, stood by continuity. Darragh's been very clever. I've watched Longford a lot. The one thing they've got in abundance is team spirit. Now, that will be tested, Kieran, in the next season, throughout the season, because nobody likes losing football matches. But even watching them last Monday, the spirit they showed, you know, like, and I also admire Darragh. He does his homework. Young Aaron Robinson, I've known about Aaron Robinson the last 3 or 4 years of Bluebell. And he's not, young Darren Craven has gone, another guy who would have played in that Leinster Senior League side has gone to Bray. There are some really good players in the Leinster Senior League. Darragh has been able to tap into that because he's had to tap into it because he wouldn't have the money to go out, the finances to go and sign probably, you know, marquee signings. And sometimes, as what happened to us in Drogheda, when you go for marquee signings, they don't always work out because sometimes marquee signings haven't got the stomach for a fight. Mm. In fairness to Darragh, I think looking at Longford, they're prepared to roll up the sleeves and battle and they play for each other and it's a great quality to have. Now, will that alone keep you up? Probably not, maybe not, but it gives you a chance.
I have to say, Robinson looks a really good player. But look, you've kind of touched on this story before with us, but you're on the beach in Spain, I think it was at the time, you get a phone call out of the blue, it's Vinnie Perth.
Yeah, again, in Fuerteventura, one of my favourite hunts, but got a fault with Vinny, and I hadn't spoke. I signed Vinny as a player in 2007, Kieran. Not many people know this, and he didn't play that much for me. I couldn't get him fit. He had an injury, but I released him at the end of that season. I let him go, 2007. I signed Vinny to ride shotgun with Sean Williams, a young Sean Williams. Vinny was going to be a holding player. Vinny was great. I always knew, I liked Vinny's character. Didn't know him well, but I always liked he wasn't particularly well liked by other players, which is good. But because he's straight up, and he had a determination about him, and he was a winner. And I knew I did crop of young players in Dundalk, and I wanted a strong character like that in the dressing room. I wasn't afraid to sign strong characters, and we had a few of them. So I got a phone call from Vinny. I would have kept in touch with Vinny. Sorry, when I kind of left Drogheda, and actually the Malahide job, I recommended Vinny Perth for the Malahide job. I got him that job in Malahide, and he's done a great job there. He got them promoted. And then Stephen Kenny came in for him in 2013. Actually, it was just after I left Pats. I recommended him for the Malahide job, and he'd done a great job there. Then he went with Stephen, and we kind of, I'm watching from the, I would have spoken to him through business, actually, through work. Wouldn't have been bosom buddies, but would have had good chats with him. I got a phone call then in Fuerteventura, and he said, well, I'm away. And he said, listen, Stephen Kenny had resigned, I think the day before, very unexpectedly. He was going to, obviously, the Irish U21 job. Vinny didn't know anything about it. But he had spoken to the club and he said, listen, I don't obviously have a pro license. I'm trying to get on the pro license course, but we'll need a pro license coach. And he was being inundated with phone calls from other people trying to offer their services. I said, listen, I'm back. I'm back this week. I'll speak to you on Friday. So when I came back and I met him, we met up in the City North Hotel. We had the same kind of philosophy. I was always inquisitive of what had made an elite dressing room, like to see, inquisitive and see what really makes elite players, what sets them apart. So it was a great opportunity to go in and see the way this works. So I spoke to the American owners, spoke to Vinny, and I was happy to go in and give him a dig out and help the club, because I go back to what I say, I have an affinity with the club. I think it's a brilliant club. So for me to help with the continuity of the changeover, I knew my role. I wanted to go in and help two young guys who were going to, and both of them will go on to have fantastic careers, Rory and Vinny. So and our first year we had an unbelievable year. Like, people think there's a fallacy, a chimpanzee could manage that group. No, they can't. Like, actually, it's more complex managing with, you know, egos, and not egos, but with the talent that was in that dressing room, and the fact that Stephen had gone. But people seem to forget it wasn't all about Stephen Kenny. Stephen got a huge amount of credit, but there was also good staff there. There was Vinny Perth had a huge part to play in it, and the players had an even bigger part to play in it. So most of them players were staying on. People thought it was the Stephen Kenny show. It wasn't. It was the club. You know, the club had a big part to play in it. The supporters, the players, the staff. So, but to go into that job and fill those shoes, and he did that, and we were penalty kicks away from, you know, doing a clean sweep. Yeah. It was a magnificent year.
I like the point you brought up there, because it was one I often heard at the time when things were going so well at Dundalk. Anyone could manage that group of players, really. It's just about keeping them ticking over or whatever.
Well, have a look now. Have a look last year. Have a look now.
That's the point I was just going to raise with you. It's not that simple. I know all of the players that were with you aren't there now, but that's still a group of top class players, and it doesn't look as organised and as structured as it did under yourself and Vinny.
Yeah, listen, obviously there was players there who weren't happy because they weren't getting as much game time as they would have liked, and you get a few disgruntled individuals. And actually, that's what annoyed me with one particular journalist. There was a story carried on after that, after Vinny left, about how dressing room unrest and this and that. You know, yes, there was a little bit of unrest because you're always going to go and rest in any dressing room because of people not playing and disgruntled individuals. And a lot of people who off the pitch, who weren't players, also sticking in their oar as well and trying to unsettle things. And there wasn't, in my view, a balanced view given. It's only now, be careful what you wish for. Look what's happened since. Now, okay, they qualified for the European for the Europa League, and I was thrilled to see that. And they won the FAI Cup, but you know, let's be honest, the league results have been poor since Vinny. Vinny Perth didn't lose a home game in a year and a half in charge. Didn't lose one game. We lost two games in our tenure there in a year and a half. Two games of football, and then he sacked because in some people's eyes he's not deemed suitable or he's not being. Listen, I feel it was a mistake then. I still feel it was a mistake now. Could we maybe been better in certain things? Absolutely. Vinny knows that more than anybody. But I still feel he should have been given a chance to carry through the job he was meant there to be. Like Vinny assembled that squad that qualified for Europe last year. And if you go back to the Collège game, if you really watch it back, and I've watched it back a number of times, we gave away a bad goal just before half time. Pat Holman hits the post in the second half. If you have a look at all the stats and in the game, we gave away two late goals. If Pat Holman's header goes in, I think we win the game. Now, some people would tell me you're delusional, but I was there watching it. I know what I was watching. Would we have got through? I don't know. But I still think with the draws after that, I still think Vinny was capable of getting the side through to the group stages.
Mm. Two things I want to pick up on what you've just said there. First of all, you totally dismissed that yourself and Vinny lost that dressing room because, as you said, that's what was in the press after you left. And second of all, you've touched on it there as well, interference from outside forces. How big was that interference? And look, again, if you read some of the papers, they say Vinny lost his job because he didn't make substitutions he was told to make. I'm sure you probably don't want to say too much. It's Vinny's story to tell, but what can you tell us?
Listen, I think it's documented there was interference. I don't really want to go too much into it, Kieran, because I don't think it's the time, and I don't think the club has been dragged through the mud enough as it is. It's a tough time for that football club at the moment, and it breaks my heart to see it. I don't like seeing it, but the club, like there was a certain amount of interference. There's no doubting that. It's well documented. Vinny has gone on record to say that. And it was difficult for him, and I felt sorry for him as a young manager, because I was a young manager once, but I never had to put up with. Bar at the time, I'm telling you about when you're called in on a Sunday, and it's not nice when your professionalism and your knowledge is taken into question. You're always open to criticism, but it's got to be balanced. It's got to be balanced. And I go back to what I say. There were players probably unhappy because we had a big squad. But Vinny signed that squad with a view in mind. We were going to be challenging on four fronts. If you look at the year before, we had four centre-halves. All of them played over 25, 26 games. We rotated a lot the year before. And it kept people fresh. And it kept people on their toes. But that does upset certain players. And you will always get a couple of players, three, four, maybe five players who aren't overly happy. And if you ask them, are they happy? They're going to tell you no. But if you ask the guys who are in the team, are they happy? You invariably get a lot of yeses. There was as I said to you, there was a lot of stuff written about, which was all coming from one way. They didn't actually ask. I was never asked at the time. Now maybe people felt that he'll gloss. I wouldn't have glossed over. I'd never glossed over anything in my life. I would have told it like it is. But I wasn't asked the question. What's gone on there? Or has there been an interference? Like people just go and write things and spout things without following up and doing due diligence. That's my opinion.
So you don't feel that you lost the dressing room?
I listen, there was probably individuals that we lost in it, Kieran, but you're going to lose that in every dressing room. You telling me last night, you look at Hazard last night, or if you look at any dressing room, that you're telling me the Shamrock Rovers dressing room at the moment is overly happy, players, everybody's happy there. Doesn't happen like that. Football doesn't work like that. You're always the hardest people, the easiest people to keep content are the 11 that are playing. The hardest people to keep happy are the 11 maybe that aren't playing. And that's maybe where, you know, maybe we could have maybe, you could make the odd mistake and maybe we should have maybe been a bit, I don't know, like Stephen Kenny seems to have the knack of doing that. Vinny does as well. I just feel that too much was made out of nothing. You go back to his record or our record, We didn't lose a home game in a year and a half. We lost two games in the year and a half. You know, sometimes be careful what you wish for.
Mm. And look, I promise this will be the final question on Vinny, because it's your story I'm here to talk about today. But are you surprised to hear him say that he would consider maybe going back to Dundalk given the level of interference there was last time?
I'm not privy to maybe conversations that he's had with other individuals. I think anybody, until you work in Dundalk and you work in the town and you work for the football club, I was there for 3 years. The easy thing for me would have been said when I was asked about to say no, the way I was treated. But the football club has a hold on you up there. It's just a great club. So I think Vinny would go back to help the club, because it's heartbreaking to see the way it's going at the moment. Yeah. It's not good to see it, because there's good people there. But they've lost a lot of good people behind the scenes as well, Kieran. There's an awful lot of people gone from behind the scenes who did a lot of great work, you know, like people that people wouldn't even know. So, and it's hard to pull it back. When you're in a downward spiral, it's hard to pull it back. Now, I think it's capable of being pulled back, but it's going to take a lot of hard work.
Yeah, because as I said, I was walking up the town yesterday and I bumped into a couple of Dundalk fans and we were just chatting about what's going on. And I just said, it feels like the buzz that was in the air has kind of gone out of a bit. And that is heartbreaking. Obviously, I'm a Longford fan, but when I moved up here a couple of years ago, I always got that sense of buzz walking up the town, even on a Monday afternoon, to be people wearing the jerseys, the businesses have had the flags out, everyone's talking about Dundalk, everyone's talking League of Ireland. You don't get that in other towns. It's very unique. And just a personal view, it seems to have seeped away a little bit at the minute. So that is heartbreaking.
It is, and it's slowly but surely losing its soul. And I hate to say that, because I love the football club. So, you know, if you're asked, if you've had an association with that football club and you're asked back to help in some way, shape or form, I think you'll say, yeah, I will go back and help it. Some people might say no, but, you know, that's I know what that football club means to people up there and what it means to me and other people. So until you're in those shoes, you can't judge. You can't say, well, I know people might have said they were surprised. I wouldn't be surprised by Vinny saying that. I think he's speaking from the heart.
And look, as you said earlier on, you've got the knack when it comes to the First Division. That's not to say you couldn't do a job in the Premier, but if a club was to give you a buzz this year from the First Division at some stage, would you consider going back into management?
Listen, I'd never say never. I'm coming up to 58. I tell you, what I will say is I'd be a better manager now than I was 20 years ago. Mm. 58 now. I've coached or managed in over 500 games. That's what makes, like, and again, I'm not everybody's cup of tea. I'm like Marmite, you know. I'm not. I realise that you're never going to keep everybody happy all of the time. But I am honest. I'm hardworking, and I'm a better person now and more experienced now, which I think you definitely gain more knowledge as you get older, and you would deal with certain situations differently, and you learn things. And I've learned an awful lot by working with the likes of Pete Mann, Dermot Keely, Trevor Crawley, some really good managers there, Vinnie Perth. So you're always adding to your knowledge. So we'd never say never. But listen, that's not for me to decide.
And you mentioned earlier as well, when you started out in coaching, there was no badges back in the day. I know you obviously have a pro license now. When you did those courses, did you feel that they actually improved you as a coach or a manager? Did you pick up stuff, or do you think there's too much emphasis put on them? Would you like to see maybe a scaling back on the requirements for coaching badges?
Well, look at the messes at the moment. Look at the hassle that Dundalk had and Filippo and all that's gone around that. And I just think, listen, Dermot Keady, Jim McLaughlin didn't have badges. Did that make them bad managers? Now, all I can tell you is that since I've done my pro, I was on the first pro license course in 2007. I qualified at the end of 2008, just after Dundalk. I haven't worked as a manager since. So it obviously hasn't helped me. Now, it's not to say that I haven't learned things off it. The course was... Some of the coaching courses are very, very good, and you do pick things up. Where I learned most of my stuff was myself and Pete Mann would have gone on club visits ourselves. I remember we went to Stoke City when Tony Pulis was there, and Nigel Klopp was in Derby. We spent a week at our own expense. We went over and spent 3.5 days in each club, access all areas. Pete Mann was able to organise that through Terry Conroy, a former Irish international who was associated with Stoke. And that's where you pick up stuff. And I've gone on club visits myself. And I'll do the same again going forward. I will go on some club visits again myself, because I think you can learn a lot from that. I'm not saying you don't learn a lot from doing coaching courses, but I just think it sometimes can create robotic coaches. You've got to be thinking on your feet. You've got to show a little bit of initiative at times. Pro licensed coaches don't show you how to be a good man manager. That has to come from within. I've seen some pro licensed coaches set up from in games, and you know, they're set up from set pieces, giving away goal after goal after goal after goal. Like, you know, that you've got to have a certain amount of football knowledge and a passion for it. As I say, I don't think it's all bad. I think you can learn. I think you can learn a certain amount from them, but I don't think it defines you, or it will define whether you're going to be a good manager or not. As I've mentioned to you there, the likes of Dermot Keighley, Jim McLaughlin. Now, you will get some people saying, "Ah, dinosaur." No, not dinosaur. These guys, let me tell you, could manage in today's football. I was with Dermot. Was a really abrasive character and abrasive manager. But once you did what you were asked to do, you were the best in the world, and he left you alone. If you weren't following orders and you didn't do what you were asked to do, he could be abrasive, as we all can be. McLaughlin, the same. McLaughlin was, people just think that Jim McLaughlin being a lovely individual, a nice man, probably one of the most ruthless men that ever managed in the league. And that comes from Dermot Keighley. I asked Dermot once about Jim McLaughlin. What was his ruthless? He was ruthless. If it was about the team, and if you felt you hadn't got a part to play in that team or couldn't contribute to it, you didn't last too long. Now, you don't learn that. You don't learn that on coaching badges.
Yeah, and so, it's the young coaches coming up. I feel sorry for, because these courses are extremely expensive, and there's very few paid jobs in Ireland. Now, it's great if you're already in with a club who might contribute towards it or pay, but you're a young, you know, 17, 18 year old with an interest in coaching, and you're not attached to a club. You have to put thousands and thousands of euro into it, and there's no guarantee at the end of it that you'll ever see any of it back.
No, listen, I think it's 9,000 now, Kieran, for the pro. Darragh Doyle is doing the pro license at the moment, along with a couple of other managers, Rory Higgins. It's 9,000 euro to do it. Now, I don't know whether the clubs are paying that or who's paying, but somebody's paying it. It's a lot of money. Now, I just think that, and again, the churning out, listen, the coach education, they're good people. Neil O'Regan, Craig Sexton, they're great people. They're doing a really good job. And I do think that there is a need for coaching courses, but they just seem to be churning them out. And we'll end up now with a country full of coaches, but nowhere for them to work.
Yeah.
Like, that's what happens. And, you know, you've also got to go and do I've got to go and do 15-hour CPD next year in 2022. I don't know whether I'm going to do it or not, but if I want to keep my pro license up to date, I've got to do 15 hours. And you've got to pay to go and do those 15 hours. And I know one other pro license manager who said to me, I'm just going to let my license lapse. Nope, I'm never going to work again, because what's the point in paying money? And those 15 hours could cost you 500 quid, 1,000 euro. Mm. Like, for what? So, wait, in the expectation that a phone might ring to offer you a job? I don't know.
Yeah, as you said, there's still no industry as such in this country. So my final question is, look, you started your playing career in 1986 in the league. Your first management job, as we said, was 2001 with Kilkenny. So even from a coaching point of view, that's 20 years experience. Do you feel the league has come on, and how far has it come in your time, and how much further do we have to go before we have an industry?
Listen, I think from a player's point of view, fitness levels and the way players look after themselves, that has come on leaps and bounds. And I think the quality in the league has dipped in the last, certainly the last couple of years. I think it has dipped because, I don't know, maybe it's something to do with COVID, Kieran. I don't know. I think the quality in the league has dipped. Really has been, and particularly this year. I don't think the Premier Division, it really is a two-tier system this year. And it's hard, like, unless you get investment, we need more people investing. Peak Six have their detractors, but we need more Peak Sixes in the league to invest in the league. I mean, we should really have a 10-team professional league here, if all things being equal, with good facilities. Now, some of the facilities are decent, but if you look up north, Kieran, to any of the grounds up there, they leave us standing. Now, because they're getting government investment. Now, it was good to see Micheál Martin on Off the Ball the other day talking about investment. But talk is cheap. Back it up. He's saying that we need to upgrade in academies and upgrade in the facility, and the league needs a leg up. But give the league a leg up. You only have to look at what the money that goes into rugby or Gaelic or horse racing or greyhounds. We get a pittance for our league, a pittance. And yet it gives great value. It gives great entertainment. There's a lot of passionate people in it, like yourself and other people doing great shows trying to promote the league. But I just feel it's left behind from a government point of view and a business point of view. And I want to see a vibrant league. So you're asking me, I think the quality probably has dipped a little bit. But I think that the players, in fairness to them, they've looked at, and players are doing the best they can within the resources that are there.
Brilliant. John, it's been absolutely fantastic catching up with you today. Great to see you keeping so well. And look, we never know where you might turn up, but you're always welcome to come back and have a chat with us anytime.
Thanks, Kieran. Great to see you doing well, and keep up the good work.